I hope you've had a good Christmas, a good New Year. And I don't know if you are into making New Year's resolutions, and some people are into that kind of thing. Some people are not so. You know Mark Zuckerberg, who founded Facebook, and he was in the news recently because he has vowed this year to give away $45 billion. That's his New Year's resolution. And he is actually, he's somebody who makes New Year's resolutions. If you look back at things he's previously said he'll do at New Year, he's, one year he said, right, this year I'm going to learn Mandarin. That was him. Whether he did or not, I don't know. Another year he said he would read 26 books in that year, all on other cultures. He said, every 2 weeks I will read a book that tells me about a different culture. Another year he said, right, this year I'm only going to eat meat that I have first killed myself. That was his New Year's resolution. I don't know if he stuck to it or not. And I think most people's New Year's resolutions are not exactly like that, but they are similar to that in that they are essentially self-serving. They're essentially about self-help, aren't they? And I think it's good to make resolutions, but I think we shouldn't be about self-help. And also, I don't think we should wait till the new year. If a resolution is worth making, if it's worth resolving to do something, then why wait to this sort of arbitrary day of the year? Just get on and do it when you think about it. When Paul was writing to the Thessalonians, he says that it is good to make resolutions. He says this in 2 Thessalonians 1. He says, we always pray for you, that our God may make you worthy of his calling and may fulfill every resolve for good and every work of faith by his power, so that the name of the Lord Jesus may be glorified in you and you in him, according to the grace of our God and the Lord Jesus Christ. It's good to make resolutions. And they're not about self-help. They are rather, they are for good and for every work of faith. And so resolutions about doing God's work, about bearing fruit for him. And in fact, this is a characteristic, this is a quality of God himself. We have a God, you know, who makes resolutions. Do you know this word that I put in blue, resolve for good? It's one Greek word. And the Greek word is eudokia. And it's just used a few times in the New Testament. Do you know the first time it's used? It was by the angels. When the angels appeared to the shepherds on the hillside and they said, glory to God in the highest and on earth peace to all men on whom his eudokia, on whom his resolve for good rests. That's God making a resolution. So if you like, God's New Year's resolution was to send Jesus. And I think that's quite cool. In Ephesians 1, it says, in love, he predestined us to be adopted as his sons through Jesus Christ, in accordance with God's resolve for good. And there are a few others. So let's make a resolution. If we're going to make a New Year's resolution, let's not make it about helping ourselves. Let's make it about doing good for Jesus. The starting point of any resolution is to look back and honour the past. And we have much to give God thanks for. This time last year, we were setting out in January, but we did not exist here, did we, in Midhurst? And when you look back at everything God has done, I think it's amazing. We were just one life group, weren't we, here in Midhurst, squeezed into one little front room. We felt very clearly from God the time was right to begin our third site, reaching into this community of Midhurst and the towns and villages around. And so we began here on 8th of March. I just wanted to, just sort of, as my testimony really, just show you this graph. Now, if you're not into graphs, then sorry, zone out for a while. This, right, is a graph of church attendance of Grace Church over every week for 2015. So these are the weeks of the year up to 52. This is church attendance. Now, it's not all about numbers, is it? We're not just about getting bums on seats. What we are about is reaching people. And so I want people engaged in church because I believe that is a community reached for Jesus. Okay, so let me just, I'm not just about the numbers. But I love it. What we have, the blue numbers here is Grace Church in Chichester. Then you add the red band, which is Grace Church in Bognor. And then you add the green band, which is Grace Church in Midhurst. Now, when we started back in January last year, Midhurst did not exist. This line here is attendance in 2014, the year previously. And what you see is that before we started Midhurst, we were pretty much the same or a bit down on the year before in terms of attendance. We started meeting in Midhurst, and you look how that line is then well above. Starting here in Midhurst has brought growth. The statistics speak for themselves. And every single week, apart from these two just before Christmas, we were higher than the same year previously. And this is our carol service. Look, we have 50 people here for our Christmas carols. We have 10 guests, and I think that was fantastic. And I just wanted to put that up. I just think we have got much to give God thanks for over last year. We've had many excellent meetings in the presence of God. We've met loads of wonderful people. I've loved walking the streets, delivering leaflets. I loved the garden party we did. I loved being out at Christmas, being an elf. That was fun. And I think it's good to look back and mark what God has done. And that's why I think I really want us to be kind of letting our faith rise as we hear people's own story. And that's what I want to give most of our time to this morning. Where are we going with this? There we go. And so we have, seven or eight people who are just going to share something of their story. And some are relating to our Midhurst site here. Some is just stories about what God has done in their lives. We're not looking for like Hollywood blockbuster kind of storylines here. This is real life, isn't it? This is about nitty gritty of what makes up our lives. And so just let faith come. And I'll try and link it all together somehow without really knowing what's coming. But we'll start with our two supernovas workers. Rachel, why don't you come first and just tell us something about what God's doing with you. I will just sort the microphone out. Hold on just a moment. There you go.
Well, my testimony starts really from about this time last year when Grace Church in Midhurst was being thought about and we were getting together and planning. So sort of separate to that, the carer next door to where we live, one of my residents, came back from Ireland. And she was very excited because they'd been looking at houses. And I said, "Oh, what's that all about then?" She said, "Well, because of the unfortunate economic situation in Ireland, houses there were very cheap." So I went back and had a look on the internet, and sure enough, you can buy incredibly nice old houses in Ireland for, you know, relatively small amounts. So as an avid Grand Design follower, I thought, right, this is it. This could be our opportunity to buy something and do it up, which is something that I've always wanted to do. So I put together a plan, and I put it to Andrew, and he wasn't really that convinced. And I spoke to Leonie, and she said, "Well, that's a stupid idea. What on earth do you think you're doing?" I said, "Well, you know," and I tried to convince them. They said, "It's a distraction." So I thought, okay, I'll concede. But I've still got it on the back burner. So, but the seed had been planted. Maybe that was something we could do. And I talked about it and got some financial advice. And, sure enough, we could actually afford to remortgage and buy another house. So we started to look in England and in this area, and then suddenly the penny dropped. It took a while, but the penny dropped. We should be actually looking for somewhere for John and Sam who were looking to come to this area from Billingshurst to rent. And of course, it became crystal clear. That's what we should be doing. So, much to our amazement, we could actually afford something in this area. So, we said to John and Sam, what are you looking for? What's your requirements? And they said, well, it's got to be 2 bedrooms minimum. It's got to have lots of storage because we have 3 full sheds at the moment. And preferably in the middle of a wood, is what you said, wasn't it? So I thought, okay, well, that's impossible because, you know, anywhere in a wood would be way out of our league. So anyway, I had a look on the internet and very quickly found 2 Stone Court, which had only just come on the market. So Andrew and I went and had a look, and it had 2 bedrooms. It had a double garage, a large outside shed workshop, and it was as near as being in a wood as you could get in Midhurst. I mean, all of you know it's right next to the trees. So we got excited about it. We had also clocked that it had a large lounge and it was ready to move into. Didn't need any work doing to it, which was also quite crucial because they wanted to obviously move quickly. So we got John and Sam to have a look. They had a look and they came back the next day and said, yeah, we feel it's right. So we started the process of buying and we got the, started to sort out the finances. Would it be possible? And actually, I mean, unbeknown to us, we'd been paying off lump sums of our mortgage on the house that we own, just willy-nilly, as and when. And it turned out that we had actually paid off quite innocently, exactly to the last pound, the right amount, so that we could remortgage enough to get the house. So that was all a bit mind-blowing. And then John and Sam moved in. Well, just before it went through, the other thing that was going on at the time was that my daughter, Rebecca, was planning to get married this last year. So we had given our other daughter a certain amount of money, which we wanted to give to all of them exactly the same. So with the sale of the house going through, obviously funds were tight. And I was sort of thinking, well, we'll just have to go into overdraft and pay her that way. Just around as the sale was going through, it had been delayed, and as these things do, just in time to get us over when the Chancellor decided to change the stamp duty system. So I think it was like 2 or 3 days afterwards we completed, which meant we had exactly the right amount to give Rebecca. I mean, exactly the amount. So by this stage, we're kind of feeling like we were just pawns in God's plan, actually, and it was nothing to do with us. I mean, up to me, we'd be buying some derelict building in Ireland, and we'd be totally distracted. But thank goodness we had people around us who were sensible, who gave us, you know, God's advice. And we're just amazed, really, and just feel, you know, grateful, really. And that's it.
Brilliant. Okay, let's give a clap. Thanks, Rachel. John, Sam, do you want to bring anything sort of on the back of that, just from your perspective of sort of getting here?
We're not greedy. What we said originally was we'd be happy with a garden shed, provided the trees were there. For me, that's quite important. The trees are quite important, and freedom is quite important. So it's a real blessing of God. It's more than you can know that he puts us somewhere that's within walking distance of the town. You know, we can walk down here, we can walk to anywhere in the town, don't have to take the car, and yet we are surrounded by trees, and there's a little gate we can open, and we can walk out onto the common. And from the common, you can walk from common to common to common, right across through Iping to Stedham. It's fantastic. In fact, Sam's used it more than I have. But for me, it's like, oh, because I can't stand being overlooked. I really can't. And God knows that, and he takes on board what we are like. And it says in Matthew 5, seek first the kingdom of heaven, and I will add all these things to you. He will take care of us, provided we seek first the kingdom of heaven. Not always easy, is it? But that's what our mindset is. Let's go back 15 years, and this is a testimony between Sam and I of how God has guided us here. 15 years ago, we knew we got to move. We lived at that time in my brother's property. We rented it off him, and he needed to sell it to buy the house, the Tide Cottage that he was in. So we had just a few months to prepare and leave. Now, we'd known for a long time that God was stirring the heart. But obviously, if you're a bit like me, God can stir your heart. But unless there's a date in the diary, you think, oh, okay, it'll be just tomorrow. Suddenly, there was a date in the diary. And we sat down one day. We'd been praying, and Sam said to me, do you feel anything about God's guidance? And I just said, west? And she said, well, west's a bit large. It goes right around. But I just said that. That was the limit of my prophetic input. And Sam started to look. And I think it was you who said, what about a post office? She'd worked in a post office. Had you worked in a post office at that point? No, you hadn't, had you? But she'd looked at these post offices and said, we could afford to get a rented property with a post office attached where the income from the post office pays the rent. And we thought, oh, that sounds okay. Sounds good. Now, you know, in the last 15 years, the story for post offices has not been good. But at the time, it wasn't too bad. And we looked at Redford Post Office, which some of you may know. Redford, not far from here. I don't know how it came up, but it did. We also looked at Cocking Post Office. And between the two, we thought, yeah, Redford's the one. We went and visited. We talked to the owner, and we talked through all the finances and such like. Spent a long time praying about it. And I felt God say, the choice is yours, John. You can either stay in Hayward Heath, and I will bless you, or you can go to Midhurst, and I will bless you, and a church will start eventually. So we said, okay, we'll go for it. We got the finances sorted. We went to the bank, and they said, oh, I'm sorry, it's just this morning been sold. The business has been sold. It's gone. So we thought, God, what's that about? But looking back, I think that's what started us thinking about Midhurst. We used to come over. We would meet for coffee here, and we would feel certain stirring about the whole thing. About, would it be 3 years ago, Bognor? Steve approached us and said, it's time for you to move from Billingshurst now, isn't it? You know, what about Bognor? How do you feel about Bognor? And he wasn't making any promises in Steve's way, but he did mention about site leadership of Bognor, and we thought, yeah, we could do that. So we went down to Bognor, and we didn't feel anything. We didn't feel a thing. John and Molly, when we were talking to them, they said, oh, we did. We really felt something for Bognor, but not for Midhurst. So on the way back from Bognor, we visited Bognor twice. We visited on a Sunday, not the best time to visit any town centre. And we visited on a weekday as well. I think it was a Saturday, but it might have been in the week. Neither time did we feel anything but, I want to get out of here. On the way back, Sam said, let's go to Midhurst, have a cup of coffee and see what we feel. Now, there was nothing about Midhurst in the offing at that point. So we came to Midhurst, sat down for a cup of coffee, and we both thought, yeah, we could live here. Sam.
So about a year ago, we did say to the children, we're going to move, we're going to go. And we knew it was right to do that. But we didn't know at that point exactly what we were going to do. There was nothing confirmed. We just knew we were moving. And our son was going to college at the time. And there's like, during the education of the children, there's like certain periods of time where you think, that's a good time to move. It doesn't affect anybody. And that was occurring last August, September time. Because Fergus would have finished college and then he would be doing his next stage. So we thought, okay, that's the time then. The girls didn't want to come with us, hence needing a two-bedroom house only. So we thought, okay, we'll do this. And then Midhurst sort of started cropping up, and we thought, actually, that is the place to be. But it was all then down to timing. And Steve at one point said, we know you can do, like, you know, the end of a school term. Could you possibly do any sooner? So we're thinking, well, don't know really. At which point Fergus came home from college and said, do you know, I'm really not happy at college. I really do want to join the army and I'd rather do it now. So I said, okay then. So he applied and got in,
And it all worked out that he would actually join in February, not the August. So I was like, right, okay, then we can do this. And we had in mind that actually for him particularly, it was quite important that when we moved, he actually had a home, because obviously everything was changing for him and he wouldn't have a home otherwise. So we wanted to move even just 2 or 3 weeks before he actually left. And it was definitely God moving and saying, yep, I'll do it. Because about 3 weeks before he joined the army, we actually moved into the house. And he had his room, and he actually had it quite tidy before he finally left. But it just felt like everything just slotted into place so well. And we didn't actually do as much as we thought we would have to, because God did it.
Is that wonderful? Let's give John and Sam a clap, shall we? Yes, we love them. Isn't it great how when God has a plan, you can be sure that he's gone ahead of you, that he's got all the pieces in place, and he's working it out in unseen ways, in a way that only God could, really, isn't it? Starting months and years beforehand to bring something to fruition. It's good to have that insight and that expectation. Cynthia, why didn't you come and share something? Well done, kids, you're doing well. Have a microphone. Shout down there.
Hello. Years ago in my old church, as I listened to God's word, I used to think that it is not us who needs to hear God, but people outside who do not know God. As time went by, my church closed. I did not want to go to other churches in the town, so I thought I was a strong Christian, I'll be okay, till God will bring his church back into Midas again. I had Christian friends. I could show God's love to people around in my everyday life. Then some of the Christian friends moved out to Midas. And I retired, and I started to do voluntary work. I was going into people's homes. I could take God in and show his love for them by the way I came alongside them and helped them. But I was giving out and not being fed. I was getting empty and tired. I had been to Grace Church in Chai a few times and got touched every time, in tears at times. But I wanted to worship God in Midas. I still believed in God and loved him, but at times I was hanging on to his cloak. At times I felt very, very alone, even that God had left me and Midas. My brother Vernon invited me to a life group in Midas, so I went and got a warm welcome and accepted. But I had been on my own so long. I had locked myself away inside. I did go back and began to open up a bit, and then started to go to Grace Church in Chai, and then became a member. Grace Church opened a branch in Midas. I thought I'd be on the edge of it. So see where it was going. But I found myself in the thick of it, and I'm opening up more and letting people in. I am on a journey with God and enjoying it. God, but you need to be fed by God and his church, which is the people he puts around you.
Isn't that superb? Such a wonderful story of God's faithfulness to Cynthia. And, you know, even over those years of wondering what God was doing, actually God's got a plan. And Two Arches in the thick of it. And isn't it great? You know, we're all involved, aren't we? And we're all needed here. So, yeah, don't anybody think you need to be on the edge. No, come and get stuck in. That's great. Right. So, what I want to say then, kids and young people, and I'll just let you organise yourselves. If, you know, if you feel you want to stay, if you feel you want to go out, then this might be the moment. Meanwhile, we have more wonderful stories to hear ourselves. So I'm going to invite Janet. Wonderful. It's Janet, let's hear your story.
Thank you.
Keep that good and close.
Sorry, I'm just going to put this down because I keep having coughing fits and hope I won't. So for those, I think everybody knows me, my name is Janet, probably known as Janet the Tea. So I'm always doing the tea. But I just wanted, I hope this is not too long, I told Dave I was about 10 minutes, he had a heart attack. So I'll try and speed it up a bit. I've been known to ramble. But basically I just wanted to say that, give a little bit of my background, because probably you guys know each other more than I know you, and say that I'm guessing, looking around, that everybody here has come from a very Christian background. Would that be right? Maybe a few, some not. But basically, if you have, you're lucky. I didn't. My father was a declared, absolutely didn't believe in God. My brother went to Sunday school, came out and said that was a load of rubbish, he was never going again. And while my mother's the kindest person on the planet, I wouldn't really call her Christian. So I didn't have any kind of Christian upbringing at all, not like some of you lucky folk. So I wandered through life, sort of going to brownies and church and did all that. And then I think my first meeting with God was quite a spectacular one. And it happened, I was working in London, I was mid-20s. Sorry if I cough. And I had a good friend, Muriel, who was very Christian, and she said, would you like to come to a Billy Graham concert? So most people know who Billy Graham is. He was a great evangelist, which I knew nothing. I didn't even know who it was. So I thought it was a concert. I thought, oh, that sounds good. I've never heard of the Billy Grahams, but maybe they make nice music. I'm off. So we went, and it was a very interesting evening, and he spoke, and it was fascinating. And I can't say I was hit by a thunderbolt. He asked people to come up. I went up. Still can't say I felt I'd been hit by a thunderbolt. But on the way home on the tube, at that point in my life, I'd been trying to make a decision. Should I stay in London? I'd got a boyfriend, Timothy. Now, remember that, everyone, because that comes up later. And I thought, shall I stay with him or shall I go back to Australia? So I sat on the underground, diddly-do, diddly-do. And a voice so loud said to me, stay with Tim. And I was shocked. I thought, who said that? So I looked at the person next to me, which is a very nice Rastafarian gentleman, and thought, well, it obviously wasn't him because he would have said it in a Jamaican accent. So I thought, that has to be God. And that was kind of a first moment. And then life moves on. I married my husband. We have two lovely daughters. Obviously, I listened to the word of God and stayed with Tim, because there have been moments when I thought, when I get to the pearly gates, I'm going to have a strong word about that information. But we stuck together and got married and had two lovely daughters. But life just moved on, and then we went to local churches, and I didn't really feel it. I felt the local churches. I loved the buildings. I felt a peace. I felt all that, but I didn't really sort of feel anything from the people. And then you said about a week or so ago that not without God is like being in a desert and you're parched. But for me, it's like being in a cinema in the dark and you're waiting for the movie to start. I'm a big cinema lover. Who likes Bond? I love Bond. But actually, not the movies, just love Bond. And so I feel it's like being in the cinema, and I felt like I've been in the dark, really, without, this will tell you how old I am, without an usherette. Who remembers usherettes? So And I felt that I'd been in this dark cinema, and then suddenly it was as if the movie had started, and it was like God had said, right, okay, you, I want you. I want you, my sunbeam, you're coming. And it was suddenly like he sent everybody to get me. He sent me my really lovely evangelical friend, Peter, who is so evangelical. If you stub your toe and say God, you'll go, yes, there is one, join an alpha course. So he hounded me, and I was like, okay, I will go, Peter, I will. And then God also sent my cousin, who's very Christian, and she hounded me. So that kind of started. So I joined the Alpha and listened to you, and that was great, and it was really lovely. And people said things like, pray. Well, probably that's second nature for everyone here, but it really wasn't for me. So I thought, well, I'll give that a go, because we had a shop and we were trying to sell it. And we really wanted to sell it in July. So I thought, right, okay. And my daughter said, I'm going to pray too, because you remember my daughter, she came to the Alpha course. And so she prayed, and we'd had interested people, but they'd all fallen out of the loop and it was getting a bit boring, and we needed to sell it. And then the following day, after praying, the agent rang and said, I've got someone for the shop and they would like to take it in July. I was like, yes! Praying works. I'm going to give this a go. So in the shop, I had this massive cabinet, and I really wanted to get rid of it. And I couldn't leave it in the shop because I'd have been fined, and I couldn't take it because I didn't have a big enough vehicle. So I remember standing there and putting my hand on it and saying, right, this, I pray God somebody has this and they can take it away. 2 days later, somebody came, I want the cabinet. And I went, I said, I can't deliver it. And they went, don't worry, I have a van. I was like, yes, this praying works. And then, so I was getting more into the Alpha. But then one of the most amazing things happened to me. We were having our house built, and they were laying the foundations. I don't know any of you have suffered having your house extended. It's a nightmare. But they'd laid all the concrete, and they put into the concrete these metal rods to put the foundations in. And the metal rods are in rows, narrow rows. So I'd gone out the back door because the tumble dryer was in the shed, and I had wrong-footed myself out of the door, and I literally turned and fell backwards onto essentially a bed of nails. And probably the nails were about, I'd say, 2 foot apart. I'm not the thinnest person. I'm probably about 2 foot apart. And I lay there thinking, I think I've been kebabbed. And I screamed because I twisted my knee, and that was really painful. My daughter came downstairs and she took one look at me and she screamed. I thought, I've definitely been kebabbed. And I thought, there must be a rod. There's a rod here somewhere. And when I looked down, they were literally either side of my body. And to this day, I don't know how I could have twisted and fallen at a twist and fallen straight between the rods. And I thought, right, this is a sign. So I started going to church and doing all of that. And it was great. And then so this sort of comes to the point that I was meant to be talking about, which is last year. And the amazing things that happened last year. And last year, Tim was working in Kathmandu, and we weren't happy that he was working in Kathmandu. We wanted him to come home, so we prayed. We'd really like him to leave your contract early, but it's very hard to leave a contract, especially as he's a spy. So he has to, you know, speak to the ministry of whatever and leave. And we thought, he's going to be stuck in this contract forever. Anyway, he did. Miraculously, they said, yes, he could go. And he left the end of March, and the earthquake hit 2 weeks after he left, and everything was destroyed. Our house was okay, but we would have had no water, no electricity, and been stuck in a Maoist area, which is not a good place to be stuck, with no transport, no nothing. And his office also took a hit. Nobody died, but we could easily have been under a lot of rubble. So that was like yet another miracle, but even before that, while we were in Kathmandu, Tim had managed to I hope nobody hears squeamish, slice the top of his finger off on cleaning the barbecue. Now, nobody here would wish to go to a Kathmandu hospital because it's not very nice. And they sewed his finger up with what resembled twine. There was like half an inch hanging out. And to the cost of £200, which is what we used to call skin tax. You got a lot of skin tax in Nepal. And so he was going the following day with my daughter. They were going to Annapurna and climbing and sort of in amongst the dirt and horrible areas of the mountains. And I was thinking the worst thing in Kathmandu is infection. I thought he's bound to get infected. And worse still, my daughter has a non-life-threatening but heart condition. So I'm thinking they're going to be up at 7,000 feet. And I was really, really scared. And add to that, the road out to Annapurna is horrific. It winds round a mountain with 2,000-foot drops. Cars come round on blind bends. Trucks with bullocks come heading at you. So I thought, right, well, I've waved them off, terrified. I'm going to get my Bible and open my Bible. And I just randomly opened my Bible and started to read. And these were the words that God gave me.
This is my God.
I hope in the Lord to send Timothy to you soon, so that I may be cheered by news of you. For I have no one like him who will be genuinely concerned for your welfare. For they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know Timothy's proven worthy, how as a son and as a father he has served with me in the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him just as soon as I see how it will go with me. I trust in the Lord that shortly I myself will come also.
So I thought, for anybody who ever says, if I say God's done things in my life, go, oh, that's a big fat coincidence, Janet, you're making it up, because I don't have a Christian background that backed me up on things that I say. I thought, well, the odds of that, my husband's called Timothy, have to be pretty high. So thank you, God, for that. And I just want to say the past year has been lovely at Midhurst. I've enjoyed coming here. The preachers have been great. And just the words have been lovely. So I'm, you know, press on in my Christian faith.
Thanks, Janet. That's great. And while you're complimenting the preaching, you can carry on as long as you like. No, that's good, isn't it? God is with us in the details of our lives. And so I hope you heard the message, prayer works. And let's keep praying. Michelle, when you come and tell us what God's been doing in your life this year.
Janet, that was absolutely brilliant. In fact, I don't know how I follow it, but anyway, I'll try. Let's have my glasses on. I forget to move my food. Okay. All of us will have noticed that we've just come through a season called Christmas. And I stand here to say, even as a believer, for many years now, Christmas just wasn't a time of celebration for me, nor was New Year. Because for many of those years, right up to and including 2014, I would get to December, I'd get to 24th, and I would say, please, Lord, thank you. Thank you that we're at the end of that this year. It's been annus horribilis, or whatever the Queen used to call her bad years. And I'd say, but next year is a new year, and it's going to be a lot better. But you know what? It wasn't. And in fact, mostly they were worse than the previous years. So I've been a Christian for 22 years now, there or thereabouts. And whilst there have been many sort of good God years, as I would call them, when I look back, I think the last 10 of those were really just filled with so much strife. And that was due to things like deceit and betrayal and rejection. And that was within all my life context. Wherever I went, it seemed to happen to me. And that was in my marriage. It was with my family. It was at work. It was with my friendships. And I was really getting quite worn down by this. And many times, I haven't got a Christian background, but I've got a Jewish background. So, you know, I've been a born-again Jewess now for sort of over 22 years. And if any of you have seen Fiddle on the Roof, you know, there's a very famous line in there, which is, oh God, I know we're the chosen people, why do you have to keep choosing me? And I would say that so many times. Yeah, put it on the roof. And also, there were times when I really had so many pity parties when I look back. Usually I was the only guest as well. So, you know, it was kind of a lonely thing to happen. But I was also very aware that I needed to stay close to God. And going back sort of 5 years now, that was the sort of existence that I had every year. And certainly sort of 5 years ago, when I, ex-husband and I separated, and then we had our subsequent divorce, and I actually expected God to be on my side. I really did. I expected him to pat me on the back and say, okay, Michelle, that was hard, and you're best out of it, and I can give you a new life and a future. But that didn't happen. What he was doing was actually teaching me about my self-righteousness, my pride, and very definitely my unforgiveness. And he worked hard on me, been very, very busy in doing that. And at times it really just felt so relentless. And I remember reading Job over and over and over again. I'm thinking, this is like Job. But then I get to the end and you think, well, actually, he's going to bless me the second part of my life. But then I realized it had to be a third part of my life for various reasons that I won't go into now. So that kind of wasn't biblical, but I sort of held on to that. And in these last 5 years, I suffered from 3 bouts of depression. And during one of those, I actually tried to end my life. I took an impulsive, but I have to say it was a very serious overdose and attempt. And when I realized that I hadn't done for that, so I was actually a bit cross with God. You know, why didn't you just let that happen? And but he was clearly saying to me, it's not your time yet, Michelle. It's not your time yet. And I just want to say something just very briefly about depression. 1 in 4 of us sitting in this room at some point in our lives will experience depression to a lesser or greater degree. And I was one of those people prior to that who thought that, you know, depression was when you just went around with a long face and you were just generally miserable. It's not. It's one of the most debilitating things that can happen to you. People are frightened by it because they give it the sort of stigmatized description of it's a mental illness. And yeah, that it is, but it's also physical. Because what happens is it's your brain dysfunctions. In the same way, if you have a heart attack, your heart dysfunctions. And we need to understand it more, I think, as a society. We also need to understand it more as a church and not be closed to the people that are going to come through our doors over a period of time who may have been in the situation or may fall, you know, have depression after they've joined us. And I would just ask anybody who either hasn't had it or knows very little about it, look it up, Google it, and just, I think we just need to be a little bit more informed as a church, because my experience was that it wasn't fully understood, there was no empathy for it, it was almost seen as something evil, and I would hate Midhurst Church to actually react in that way. So if anybody comes through the door and needs to discuss that, head them my way, and I will listen and hopefully be able to help. So we got to the end of 2014, and I actually had no reason to believe that the following year was going to be any better than the previous year and the one before that. But in 2014, which had been just as troublesome as we tripped, During that year, I had discovered Grace Church in Chichester. And I actually never imagined that I would... Never imagined that I would have ended up here in Midhurst. I thought about moving, but God never gave me that sort of clear signal that that's what I should do. Even though I live in as I say, in Chichester. But there is one verse that I just held on. I've got it everywhere in my house. And that's Jeremiah 19:11. For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, plans not to harm you, and plans to give you hope and a future. Because when you've led an existence where you've got no hope, it's actually quite scary. So I've held on to that. And when I kept, when 2015 actually started where it, even though I discovered grace and, you know, it was like, I liked a lot of people there and I loved the ministry, etc., etc. I, you know, I didn't have, nobody would have thought it, but actually my self-esteem was very low. I didn't have a job by that time because I had to leave my last job. I had a very challenging relationship with my son, who was adopted. And I really didn't know where I was headed. And, you know, I was just kind of doing life as best I could. But by the beginning of 2015, it was in the public domain that we were establishing the site in Midhurst. And I clung on to that as, you know, it really was giving me hope that this was something new. And I felt sort of at ease in Grace Church. And I just loved the life group. And you know, and it was the core of the establishment, if you like, of where we are now. And I actually think that I was kind of, I sometimes think, why? But I think God has put me here. And in our small beginnings, where I could feel safe, I'd actually forgotten how to trust, didn't want to trust. But I felt safe here. And over the last year, I kind of feel that I've been given a sense of value. But the main thing is that we need to, I think we need to value ourselves in order to be able to help the people out there to come to know the kingdom of God. And I thought a lot about Jesus when he was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane and applying that to you know, to today's society, even though he knew that he was the Messiah. He was praying, God, take this cup of suffering away from me. And I believe there are many people around who actually feel that way. And that when he, you know, when he said that to God, he was really at the end of his rope. He was really making a genuine, I think, perhaps even suicidal call for help. I've also shared with some kind of my observation of the last three lessons that Jesus left with us human beings all those years ago. And they were around betrayal, and they were around rejection, and they were way, and they were around forgiveness. So, you know, we had the betrayal by Judas, we had the denial by Peter, and then the very hard lesson on forgiveness. A good lesson, but a hard lesson on forgiveness when he had his two sinners either side of him. Lord, forgive them because they don't know what they do. I think I've got those words right. But there they were. And I think all of those emotions, particularly the betrayal, the rejection, they're probably the deepest hurts that anybody can suffer as a human being now. They're, you know, they're almost unbearable, but the way out is through forgiveness. So at the beginning of 2015, actually contrary to expectation, it was a good year. And I can reflect on it now and see how God has been working. I'm mortgage free now, and I think what Rachel said earlier about her house plans. I was given an income stream. We talked about good timing, amazing timing, perfect timing of God. One of my income streams expired, and from the day after, God gave me another income stream. So what I really want to say is that I think What is so important in our lives as Christians is to learn to forgive. And the other thing that God did, very troublesome and challenging relationship with my son, partly to do with the fact that he's adopted, but also a lot to do with the stuff that he's had to go through, including the separation and divorce of his parents, which is huge. And I will say to anybody, if you're headed that place, don't do it. Get counselling, get talking, just don't do it. The other side is not greener than the side that you are on. And you think the hurts will be over, they're not. They just keep coming and coming and coming. And I'm now in a place, I think, where I'm starting to build trusting relationships. I'm nearly finished. And I have to say that, you know, Christmas was good. Actually, I have two of them. That's another long story, but I had two family Christmases. And I'm really looking forward now to 2016. It's going to be the year of my retirement, so I become a pensioner. Yay. And I also get my financial, you know, gift every month from God. And from his bank, and I get a free bus pass, and the number 60 actually comes up here. I've spotted it. So I really just want to thank God. I really want to thank him from the bottom of my heart for the way that he has provided for me, the way that he has protected me, and all his favor. And I really just want to give him all the glory. Thank you for listening.
Great. Your honesty there, and you know, the faithfulness of God. It's not just about the easiness of life, is it? And life being all wonderful. It's actually knowing God's presence with you when times are tough and when things are hard. And it's so good to, it's so helpful to have that just described in real terms. And it's good that we are hear an encouragement to one another, and I hope you don't underestimate how much you are an encouragement to the people around you. You are certainly an encouragement to me, and I think not least certainly, and one of the people I find most encouraging this year is Michelle, so thank you. So yeah, good. Right, just a few more, a handful more. Where do we go now? Jeremy, where are you, Jeremy? Let's hear what God's been doing with you.
Thank you. There's kind of two things we've found this year. The main one being finding Grace Church. We started going to church in Petworth when we lived there when Ella was born. And we found a really good family there. We got lots of friends, and we went to church there for probably about 5 years. When Livy was born, we moved to a bigger house because we were living in a flat in Petworth. And we moved over to Midhurst. And we kind of lost touch with our family over in Petworth Church and kind of felt like we'd been forgotten. And, you know, we kind of fell out with the we didn't fall out of the church, but we fell out of love with the church, and we just stopped going. And we felt that's okay, we can cope on our own, sort of thing, you know. And although we knew of other churches around, Grace in Chichester, we'd been a few times, and we kept on making excuses, and we went through about 10 years of not really going to church. And actually, now I look back on it, I can really see how we totally hadn't coped on our own. We'd fallen away from God hugely. And so when we heard that Grace was starting in Midhurst, you know, all the excuses that we'd had of it being in Chichester and being a bit far and being a bit early and all of that sort of thing, you know, we realized that was just silly. You know, we needed to be at church because we were really struggling with stuff. And so we came, and actually it's been amazing. We've found a massive change in our lives and a huge fulfillment, really, with God and everything. And it's amazing. It's been the best thing we've done ever. And just the people we've met and the way that, you know, our life works now with God and everything is amazing. And that is down to getting back with God in a church environment, you know, and that's amazing, really. I can't explain how good that has been. That kind of leads to the second thing that we found, and Livy, our middle daughter, you probably know, she has, since she was about 2 weeks old, had a condition called fibromatosis, which is a group of tumours that she has in her right shoulder and arm. Although they're not cancerous, they behave in the same way. They just don't damage you in the same way. And for years and years and years, we've been going down to Southampton and having them. She has MRI scans and all sorts to have them checked. And nothing's happened with them. They've always stayed the same. She's grown. They've not grown with her or anything. So it's been a huge relief, and we've been very positive about the fact that nothing is really going to happen with it. Up until, I think it was just after her 10th birthday. That's right. We went down for one of the appointments when she became 10. And they said, look, we feel this is fairly sensible. Now it's not going to do anything. If you'd like, we can discharge her. And because it was such an unknown thing, we felt that we didn't want to do that, because if something did happen, we would have to, it wouldn't be such a smooth passage back into the hospital to get it all, you know, looked at and everything. So we stayed with the hospital and agreed that we would come back after another year just to have another check. And a couple of weeks later, her arm started to, we noticed a swelling in her shoulder. And she'd complained that it was hurting a lot more than it used, you know, it gives her a bit of aggravation, but very little. But she said that it was hurting, you know, she'd really noticed it. So thankfully we had stayed on the books. We rushed down and they did a few scans, and she had a blood clot in her shoulder. Because the tumours restrict the blood vessels, it had happened, and so she was getting extra pressure in her shoulder and it was giving quite a lot of pain. The solution to this was either to let it be and see what happens, or to have some sort of operation to try and alleviate it. But they didn't want to go in unnecessarily, so we left it at that for the time being to see what would happen. And we came back here and prayed about it loads, and lots of people prayed for her, which was amazing. They gave us 2 weeks. We had another MRI scan just to see what the progress was. And when we went back to get the results for that, they told us that it had all gone. Wow. Completely. And we just knew that was God's movement, and it was everyone praying that had really done it. And the relief was incredible. And, you know, that's just God moving in our lives, and it's amazing. And that's, you know, the two things that we've had this year, really. And wouldn't be without it. It's amazing.
Brilliant. Thank you, Derek. That's wonderful. Isn't that great? God's faithfulness in healing power. You know, it goes back to what Janet said, that prayer works. And of course, when we're sick, we can come to our God and ask for him to pray. And isn't that great? Wonderful testimony of healing. And it's so good. Jeremy and Katie and the family, pillars in our church. And yeah, superb. Right, where do we go now? Greg.
So I've got a short testimony. Last year I stood up in front of the Bognor site when we were down there and talked about a year that we had, which was horrendous. So we went through a four-month period at the beginning of the year where Becca had a miscarriage, but then didn't get better from it and ended up in hospital later on in July. Then after that, I suffered with a deep bout of depression, came out of that, came to the new year and felt God was actually going to do stuff with us this year, really felt from meeting with people in Bognor site, leadership, going, right, what's God going to do with us? We're really excited for the year. And then within 3 months, I'd got a new job at Seaford College, which is a much better job than I was in. And God really blessed me, and I'm now the manager of the IT there, which is great. Sadly, we did have another miscarriage this year, but it wasn't as long. It was quick, and both Becca and myself felt a lot stronger in God, that we could just trust in him that actually, yeah, these happen. It's not something that we can control. It happens, so actually God is with us. Then we came to Midhurst, and during that time, how we got to come to Midhurst is we were praying and really feeling God calling us to more in the church. So to do more, to get involved more. And Bognor's quite big, and there's lots of people doing lots of things in Bognor, and we were feeling like, God, what do you want us to do? And we started praying. We wanted to move our house anyway. And then John kept badgering me to come up to Midhurst and join. Come up here. And then we got our notice given on our property in September. And then at the same time, David and Steve got up and said that they want more people and families to come up to Midhurst. And everything just kind of fell into place. And we were like, okay, very short window of about 3 weeks where we decided to leave the Bognor site and join up here in Midhurst. And we did. And the whole house moving thing, so in 2 months we won't have a house. We're not worried. We're completely trusting in God that actually the year that we've had and the year before, God's really grown us and shown us that actually trusting in him is the only thing we can do. There is nothing else. We can't hold on to anything else. So if we become homeless on the 29th of February, that's fine, because I know God's got an amazing plan for us in that. So that's my short testimony.
Thanks, Greg. It's wonderful. It's always good to track what God is doing in the Bell household. It's like never a dull moment. But and it's an ongoing story, isn't it? But always with God moving and holding that family faithfully. Now, Chris. Now, this is unplanned. So Chris, I know from a few years ago, it was good that you came on Alpha, it was good to get him known. Started coming along just before Christmas. It's great to have you with us, Chris. I don't know what you're going to say. You need to be brief.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Okay.
So don't okay. Get too much liberty.
No, that's fine. Okay.
But it's good to... Yeah. It was good doing
yeah,
with
well,
you.
This is complete trust by my friend here. And this is my second visit to Grace here. I just want to be able to tell you how God's moving in my life. I became a born-again Christian 25 years ago in Wales when I was a 20-year-old. And something happened in the church where the elders and the management of the church self-collapsed, basically. They did all sorts of things that were going wrong, and the church collapsed. And I'd given my heart to the Lord, and I had a wonderful relationship as a new Christian, and I felt very vulnerable when the church collapsed, and it really hurt me deeply. And I blamed God. I went away from religion, from God, and everything that happened in my life and everything that went on in my life over the subsequent years, I blamed God for. And I don't know when it actually happened, but I, over the course of being a builder and that sort of thing, I always thought that being a builder and drinking went hand in hand. You know, that was where it was. In my life, I don't know when it actually happened, but from going from a drinker to a heavy drinker to an alcoholic, at some time across the line. I'm not going to go into a big history about what happened in my drinking career, only just so much to say that I lost my house, I lost my wife. My eldest daughter hadn't spoken to me for 3 years. She was 17. My daughter, 12, 5 years and 3 months ago, said to me, I don't want you as my dad anymore because you're a very rude word. when I, in September 2010, the 10th of September 2010 was my last drink. When I got to that point, I had to surrender to the fact that I was mentally, physically, and more importantly, spiritually bankrupt. You know, that I had absolutely nothing left. I was completely, completely empty, you know, of everything. And I came to realization that the only thing that person could help me was God. Now, I didn't know this at the time, but my mother, who's a born-again Christian, prayed for me for 25 years every day. Every day. And she hoped that I would find the opportunity to be able to get away from my illness, which is alcoholism. I did what I was suggested. I followed a 12-step spiritual program for the last 5 years and 3 months. But I found that recently, up until the end, until about midsummer last year, I wasn't able to find the church that I really wanted. I've been searching around all over the place. I used to go to Coin at Woking and places like that, but it was too far and it was never quite right. But this is, I feel as though, you know, I've come home. This is, you know, salvation, which is another word for coming home, as far as I'm concerned, that this might well be the future for me here. I'm a baby. I'm a new Christian again. You know, this is new beginning. So 2016 is relevant for me on this case. I want to say that the opportunity to come here, you know, and to become a better Christian, to go from the start. But I've sat there and I had a calling to do this. So, you know, I had just a quiet time whilst we were all doing the worship. And I just felt that, you know, that I was going to put my name forward at the beginning. But I thought, no, better not, you know. not sure. But when I was sat there, I thought that was necessary to come up here. But I'm Chris and I hope to see you all again soon.
Fantastic. It's good to have you with us, Chris. And, you know, I that would be my prayer that this is your home. And yeah, welcome amongst us. So, Sue, do you want to just wrap us up so you'll be last? And Andrew, too?
We're doing different things. Okay. It's only that. I'll be very quick, but God always provides. It's amazing. And I there was somebody who was in difficulties financially, and she had to go to the dentist, and it was going to be a huge bill. And I said, "Well, God, what are we to do about this?" And God gave me toothache, and I said to him, "What do you want? What are you saying to me through this?" And he said, "Pay for it. I'll provide." And as soon as I said yes, the toothache went. So I knew that God wanted us to provide for that. But sometimes I still, sometimes when a bill's coming up, and I think to myself, we were a bit short, and it was a 300 plus bill coming up, and I was wobbling a bit, and God said, "No, I gave you that toothache, you're to pay." So we paid. And amazingly, through the door came a card, and we've kept it on our mantelpiece. And inside, somebody had printed Jehovah Jireh. And inside was £300. God does provide.
I came to Midhurst in 1975 to work. That stage I was single, so I'd normally went home at weekends to see my parents. And about a year later, I'd run into a fellowship in Chichester, another one, and discovered that there were a couple of people living in Esbourne, just up the way. And so the first thought was, it would be wonderful, we'll have a church in Midhurst or in Esbourne. And I discovered that there are various other people who were praying for this, many of them who died without seeing the promise. But there are a lot of people concerned about it. Well, things went on. We got married. We started a small fellowship with two other couples, which lasted a year or so, and we used to have communion together and the rest. And then, of course, there was the Vine Fellowship, which came in. We ourselves went to eventually to Three Counties Church in Hazelmere, and we had a wonderful 24 years there. But what struck me afterwards was, well, when the Vine Fellowship eventually closed, there was also, of course, a Bible college just up the road from us, Budgner Lodge, which went on for 10 years. And that was really exciting. Things seemed to be working, and then it all died. And, you know, I got this dreadful sense that we'd missed our opportunity in Midhurst. All those years, and it had gone, and we'd failed, and that was the end. And then we heard rumours of this strange bunch, Grace something or other, around. And then we started coming on in March to the afternoon effort. And here we are now. And what I'd say about this church is we've had some wonderful experiences elsewhere, but you're the friendliest bunch I've met. And also, I have a sort of sneaking suspicion that this is going to work. And I reckon that the Lord is very chuffed.
That's great.
Isn't that wonderful? Andrew and Sue are such gifts to us here. I love you to bits. So it only remains for me to ask then, what are you going to resolve to do in 2016? It's good to look back, isn't it, and just see how faithful God is. But we also, at the start of this new year, don't we, look forward to everything that God is going to do with us. Make your own resolution, not for your own self-help and self-improvement, but for what God can do through you, what you can do with God. The best resolutions are one that bring glory and honour to him. And do you notice, who is it that fulfills the resolution? It is God himself. And that's what Paul prayed to the Thessalonians, that God would fulfil the resolutions that we have. So don't be limited by what you feel you can achieve and you can offer in your thing. Dream big dreams. And as we go into this year, let's dream big. You know, it's wonderful how we are a family together. It's wonderful how we've seen God move in healing power. Let's dream big for what he's going to do. And let's see his name going out to this community.